Okay, so I will talk about my project with about cross-species analysis of gene expression, and this is a joint work with Johannes Berg and Michael. Okay, so we had this discussion yesterday about challenges of evolutionary analysis on genomic level, and there were like different topics discussed, like this model for neutrality and independence of sites and epistasis. And okay, so in this study, I will also try to quantify evolution, but on the next level of this quantitative trait of gene expression. And we also encounter challenges in this analysis. So. Not really different. So, we start with is to we have to design a statistical basis for a comparison of expression of single genes and also of co-expression clusters. And having this framework, we can later address questions such as. Detection of conservation and of adaptive changes. So okay, so my talk will be like more method oriented, and so I will be like showing how how we build the model, like mostly. And then, at the end, I will show some results. So we used this genome-wide. Microarray data for human and mouse, where the expression is measured in a wide set of tissues in both species, and it's done for the whole set of for the whole genome. Okay, so so the first problem we want to solve is that we have this expression measured for genes in two species and in different tissues, and we just want to say whether they are the expression is similar or not. For example, if it's tissue specific, if the gene from human and the gene from mouse is like both expressed in, for example, liver, or if it's expressed in a broader range of tissues, if the pattern is similar. Okay, so the problem is that we have that some, for example, like in this example, we have liver, kidney, and brain. There is where expression is measured for both species, but there are some additional tissues that are not present in the other species. So, the simplest approach would be to disregard the tissues that are present in only one of the species, and just to take the expression in the corresponding tissues and compute correlation. But what we would be assuming here would be that the divergence, that the tissues are comparable between species. So for example, that there is the same level of conservation between liver and kidney and brain, and also we would disregard the remaining information that is also contained in this data. So we propose a better method, and it is based on this observation that first, within species there are correlation between expression in tissues. So what is here on this left matrix are tissues from human, and so they are actually sorted so that the ones that are correlated are next to each other. So for example, here is like a set of this cluster of tissues that are brain related. So you see that you see this pattern that even if you also wanted to if you just took a set of tissues and you wanted to compute correlation, then you would, if you didn't discount for these correlations, then you would be overcounting this information. And the other thing is that if you take a set of homologous genes, then you can also compute the similar correlations between tissues from two different arrays. So so here we have mouse tissues and human tissues, and there's a very similar pattern here. So there are, like, on this right upper corner, there is a cluster of brain-related tissues in mouse and in human, and you also see this diagonal. So what it gives us is this quantitative mapping of tissues. So it's not like one by one. We don't map liver to liver, kidney to kidney, but we have a quantitative way to map the tissues. Okay, so just to show you how what we get from this. Okay, so on this plot I just took a pair of orthologs from human and mouse, and in this left plot, I plotted the pattern for tissues. So this is the solid line is for human, the dashed line is for mouse. And here I took only 30 tissues that I could map by name from the two species. And I just, yeah, so here are the tissues, and here's the pattern plotted. Okay, so we just say that this is a common, this is the same space of tissues, right? So for example, here will be, I don't know, liver, kidney, and brain.
So what is the number on the y-axis?
And this is expression pattern. So this is the expression level.
This is the particular gene.
For one particular gene, yes.
For one gene.
One gene, and this is the second. It's orthologue in mouse. Okay, and so this would be this straightforward mapping, just one to one. But having this matrices I showed you can actually use them to project the genes from this one species space to another one. And then you have, then you can show. So then you can express this human expression pattern in terms of mouse tissues, and this is what I did here, and it actually, it just looks very much. You see much more similarity here. So
this is not for all genes.
No, this is one gene. This is just one exemplar. This is one example. Right, so it's just to show you how this quantitative mapping can help in detecting similarity. So you take a vector, right? And but you take two vectors, like human vector and mouse vector.
And
you want to compare them.
Expression level of a particular gene and a particular tissue.
Yeah, so expression vectors just for given vector for given gene measures its expression in this many dimensions, right? Many tissues, right? And then you can also use this matrices to project vector from one space to another, and this is what is done on the right hand side.
Okay, so you say, but then it's not anymore a single gene, at least in the other species, right?
Okay, I learned it from the set of all genes, but it just tells me how I should relate. What is the dependence of?
So simply write the formula. That's
okay.
It mixes up the tissues then.
It takes many tissues.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah. There's a linear map between the two tissues.
Yeah, I see.
And this matrix is just sort of converted into a linear map.
And on the left, right. And on the left side, you just take a diagonal matrix for
right. Okay, so you say that you have this two vectors, right? One is in human and the second is in mouse. And then you have this. Okay, this matrices, and actually, okay. So maybe I'll just show you the full picture. So you have you actually compute covariance. And then, and you have, okay, so you can compute this covariance of tissues in within species for human and human, and for mouse and mouse, and also between species, human and mouse. Okay, and this I will call G, this I will call G hat, and the whole thing is a capital G, just I will use this notation. And then what you do is you take x, you multiply it by the inverse of g, but cut only like but all, and then you just take but just by only this cross species part. So just say this hm, and then you later rotate it with this matrix. So. And then it's in this mouse space. So, mm-hmm. So this is the operation. Okay, so I'll just say about so in more detail about the model we use. So first, the first thing is that microarray data is noisy. So we spend some time to look for the signal in this measurements. So there was some information that we disregarded from the measurements, and one of them was that if you have this expression pattern, then what we decided to compare were deviations from the average. So we first took this expression vectors from morphologous genes, and we saw that there was no signal on this of conservation between this or there was very poor signal of conservation between the average expression level. So. And it maybe it was just a source of noise. And the other thing is that also the amplitudes of the vectors were not conserved. So what we did is that we normalized the amplitudes so they are all the same. Right. So okay. So this is the notation. Well, I will always use the X for human and X hat for mouse. Then the model says that this X and X hat they follow Gaussian distributions. So I just said that we normalize them to have the same deviation, and this is a hard constraint, but you can make it softer by saying that they are from Gaussian distribution which in many dimensions is equivalent. I mean, it gets equivalent because the deviations of the amplitudes of vectors get smaller in many dimensions. So okay, so this is our model. We say that human vectors are from one Gaussian distribution, and mouse vectors are from the other Gaussian distribution, and this is where the tissue covariances enter here. So the covariance is described by this, by what I was showing there, and okay, and then we also we take this vector from one species, the second from the second, and we want to check whether they are related. And if they are, then they will not follow this Gaussian distributions independently, but there will be some pattern in the angles between these two genes, which is described by this total covariance matrix over there. So then, what distinguishes this model for related genes is that. That this angle between them is not independent, and in this distribution, this is just this Gaussian component. So, So this notation means that we just like somehow concatenate the vectors, as I concatenated the covariance matrix and yeah. Okay, now we have like so we have two models. One says that the genes are independent. The other says, and which is just the product of these two marginal distributions. And the other says that the genes are related, and we can use this log likelihood score to say whether two genes are more likely to be if they are from the functional model or the null model. And we validated it with by computing the distribution of scores for pairs of orthologs and also for pairs of random gene pairs. And here are these two distributions. So the red one is for orthologs and the green one is for random pairs. So like what we want to get here is a distinction of these two distributions. And and there is a distinction. So there's like 67% of orthologs would get a p-value of lower than 0.5 in the under this null model, i.e. this green distribution. I mean, of course. So this is so here we just take so part of the similar genes can also be here in this among random pairs, because there are the genes that have similar expression patterns but are not orthologs due to co-expression and other things. Okay, so having this score, we can already ask some question, and here it was: is there any like conservation or divergence related to functional classes? So if we take genes that are involved in some function, would they have more? Would they have higher scores to their orthologs than average? And here I have this example of, so the black curve is what used to be red on the previous slide. So this is just this distribution of scores of all orthologs. And then you can take genes that are involved in the structural constituent of muscle function. And as you can see, the distribution is shifted to the right towards the high scores. Or you can also take other function is ubiquitin protein ligase activity, and here the scores are shifted to the left. And okay, so I did it systematically for I just took all gene ontology classes that were in my that were in the data set, and I computed this Kolmogorov-Smirnov test to compare the distributions and get p-values for difference of these distributions. And in the red, I showed the ones that were shifted to the right towards the high scores, and the blue are the ones that are diverged, so they were shifted to the left. And maybe what is interesting that I had this immune response that was conserved, and in papers about sequence divergence, then this is the class that is usually most diverged. But maybe it's not very contradictory, because here we measure we just measure in what tissues the genes are expressed, and it doesn't say about sequence differences.
The more tissue specific the gene class is, strong
is going to
be a
signal. No. It doesn't depend on. It just depends. Like if something is tissue specific, then it's actually just a bit different. It's just a direction of the vector, right? So you can think that they all lie in this sphere, and if something is tissue specific, this is just one like range of directions. So there is just pointing to liver, for example, right? But it doesn't. This tissue specificity doesn't enter here. So. Okay. So. Okay. So just. So just to like summarize this first part, I have this new way of like measuring similarity of genes between like both within species, and this is like by use of this covariance matrix that discounts correlations between dimensions, and also I have a measure to compute similarity between vectors from two different species, and we also have this log likelihood score from which we get statistical scoring of the similarities. Okay, so this was the part about the expression of single genes, and now I'd like to talk about the co-expression, and so now just concentrate on expression in one species, and then like the problem looks more or less like this picture now that we have just many vectors, and we want to like know whether some of them are like significantly co-expressed or not, and. And we also want to know which genes are they, and we want to find them. So for example, on this picture, this could be this set, but maybe we could also move this round circle a bit to the right to include this the other gene. So, so what we're gonna do? We will define a cluster score, like a way of scoring clusters. And later we would like to compute significance of the clusters. Okay, so this problem is we can find analogies in local alignment score statistics, where you align two sequences, and you have scores for mismatches and matches, and they sum up. And you just go along the sequence you align, and you just sum up the consecutive scores. And then at the end, so this is so if you and then so you have the scoring system, and the idea is that the average, that expected score per side, which should be negative, and this amounts to that if you just go along this sequence, you will have you will have this score islands, because whenever you just go below zero, you will you finish your score island and then you start a new one. So so you have this many score islands, and then Karin and Altschul gave a solution for to get significance for the highest score, and this is just given by extremal value statistics by the Gumpel distribution. So you can find analogies in this problem. You just have you can imagine that you have this one direction, some given direction vector, and then you want to try to align all the other vectors that you have to this one. So you have So in this case, vectors would be sequence letters, and the reference sequence that was aligned here is just would be this direction vector just repeated at n times. And what would be different here is the scoring systems because you have it's no longer discrete as in the space is no longer discrete as in case of sequence here you have four letters, but you have you just have vectors in the real space, and also there is no ordering of points, so we can always if something gets a positive score with the with these direction vectors, it can always be added added to the cluster. So so if you think about this problem that you just start from some direction vector, like the central vector, and you want to find vectors that would be in a cluster with this. That has this gene as a center, then you have only one score island. But you can also think about it differently. That you about different a bit different problem where you want to find you don't fix the starting the center, but you just want to look for the optimal direction. So you look for the best cluster. Okay, so. So first, talk about this, how we score this cluster membership. So this, as before, the vectors follow a Gaussian distribution, and they are independent. So in the null model, they are independent on the direction of the cluster. And then you take the direction, you just fix it, the cluster center, and the vectors that are distributed around this center to follow a different distribution that has this enhanced similarity to the center. Right, so they will also have this Gaussian component here, but there's this this term here that would make it that means that they are closer to the center, and there's parameter eta here which somehow like tunes the expected radius of the cluster. So you can specify in the model whether you want to have small like tight clusters or big clusters, and so this is what this parameter eta is for, and then. And then you can define the log likelihood score, which is the log ratio of the two distributions. And what you get from that is eta times the similarity of two vectors minus mu, which is given by the normalization constant. So it just shifts the similarity so that it's going to have positive values. The score will have positive values if vector X and Z are more likely to follow the cluster model, and will be negative otherwise. And okay, and then so this log likelihood score can also be used. It's a similarity measure of X and Z, and I will later use it in the clustering algorithm. So, okay. Okay. So, so this was the score for one vector. Then you have, then you imagine that you have the whole system has n vectors. That are in m-dimensional space, and then you can for this given central vector you can compute total cluster score, which is just a sum over all elements in the system, and then it says then you just add to the clusters only the one that get the positive score. And yeah, and the total cluster score is just a sum over all cluster members, sum over all scores for cluster members. And the question we ask is that we want to compute the distribution of cluster scores for the null model, and this will give you this will give us a p-value for observed clusters. Okay, so we get an analytical solution for this, and this is just to which I omitted here in the slides, but just to show you that it we also did the numerical experiments. We were like drawing n vectors from the null distributions and computing scores for the system, and this like repeated many times. We got the numerical distribution for scores, and this agreed perfectly with the analytical solution. So yeah. Okay, and so this is also different problem I mentioned in the beginning, is that where you don't fix the central direction, but you look for the optimal one. And so you have your set of vectors given, and you just want to find a cluster that has the highest possible score. And this is actually this distribution is different from the one I was talking before, where you start with a given center. Well, of course, it shifted to the higher scores because this is the optimal score, but it also has different slope. And right, so for that we also got it solved. So we got the solution that is asymptotic in the number of dimensions. And the more dimensions, the more tissues you have, then the closer to the closer you get. So this is the analytical solution. So okay, and so the difference is between these two problems is that first one you could say, okay, I have some gene given, and what is the and then I just gather all the other all genes that are co-expressed with this gene, and yeah, and then I want to know how much of them should I add so that it's how many of them are significantly co-expressed with this gene, and this one is more. Yeah, this is another problem where I don't start with one gene, but I just in a set of genes I look for the for optimal for expression. Okay. So now we can move to this to conserve co-expression. So this problem here to the left is what I was talking about. So we have the null model was saying that we have independent genes in the functional cluster model. There was enhanced the genes were showing some enhanced similarity to the cluster center. And then if you want to, you can there's like a straightforward extension to if you want to look for clusters that are conserved between species. So then what you say is that you have pairs of orthologs. And in the null model, these pairs are just follow independent distribution. And then in the cluster model, they all of them are in both species are show this similarity. And okay, so as before, I was using this log likelihood score that had this one parameter eta, and yeah, and it was measuring similarity to the cluster center Z. Then here, I just like it's very analogous, but I just take a pair of vectors like human mouse and compare it to the cluster center, which is also a pair of vectors X and Z, and then the score will has two parameters, so it just that tune the expected the expected similarity in the clusters and in the first species and in the second species. Okay, and okay, so and this is what I'm gonna use in as a similarity measure. And okay, so what you can also do with this is you can do this the whole significance analysis that I talked about before for one species case. It's you can repeat it for the joint clusters, and then. And then you can. What I did was to cluster the whole data according with this similarity measure for pairs of genes. So the problem that I solve here is that you look for assignment of this element to clusters. So you have n elements, these are this n pairs of genes, and you want to identify cluster centers among these pairs, and you at the end you optimize, you look for function m and the cluster centers that optimize the total score over all clusters. So we just sum up over all elements the similarity of these elements to their assigned cluster centers. And this problem can be solved with the affinity propagation clustering algorithm. So this is what I used and then later what I did was that I took the resulting clusters. And I was computing significance of the clusters, and I left the ones that were significant according to this what I was showing earlier. Okay, so.
So question.
Yes.
So here you're optimizing m, the number of clusters, just the right.
So okay. So what it. It depends on so the parameters I enter are actually this eta and eta hat, right? So and they actually say how tight the cluster should be in the how tight the cluster should be, and yeah, so I mean the number of clusters optimized is it, but this is yeah, but actually this is this assignment. What I look for is this the function, right? Okay, and then so I got this joint clusters of logs, and then what I did first was to like relate the size of the clusters to the similarity of orthologs. So every cluster has a central gene, and for this central gene you can compute similarity to their orthologue. So and there seems to be a trend that the bigger the cluster, the more similar there's more conservation in expression between genes that are in this cluster. And And also the other observation was that among the significant clusters, but the majority of them were enriched in some gene ontology terms or were corresponding to KEK pathways. And here's an example of complement and coagulation cascades, and which is like in like many genes from, so I took one of many genes from this cascade were just corresponding to one of the clusters that I got. So so this just yes, I can summarize now, and so we showed what I showed was first this statistical theory for measuring similarity of single genes between species, and also the theory for significance of co-expression, and the algorithm for detection of conserved co-expression, and most of the clusters, the clusters that were detected with this method were functional models, as I showed, that they were corresponding to KEK pathways or like just the genes in these clusters had some common function, and what we were thinking about is that like having this framework, we could actually look for adaptive changes of gene expression patterns. So you can imagine that you have two conserved clusters, and so there are like genes that are tightly co-expressed in human and in mouse, but there was a difference in the expression pattern between these two species. This is actually this would be a similar idea that is behind the McDonald-Kleitman test, that where you have within species you have small changes, but you observe big change between the species, and this could say that we have positive selection. Okay. Yeah. So that's what I wanted to say.
I always think about it that it's very dynamic, because you measure it in certain conditions,
mm-hmm.
and then if you measure it under different conditions, it might be something completely different. So have you found something that in one environment, or like you put some stress condition in human and mouse,
mm-hmm.
One mapping, but then you change that condition to something else, and the mapping is not even the same. So that like fine scale of this.
So I think this is like a bit on different. So here I have expression measured in tissues, and so I didn't actually have, I don't have data for like relative differences, like for the differences in, I don't know, like time course data, or something like that. So this. So I mean the conditions here, so you can have the conditions you're talking about would be like I don't know, some like, or I don't know, like also like knockouts of genes, and how, or like also for example, yeah, also like this time courses, right? So
right,
like
right,
you have
but
a
but whatever is mm-hmm. the condition, because you know expression, it's not constant.
Mm-hmm.
It will change, and you put it in a different environment, it changes again. So
like,
it's like
I don't think that yeah.
Then like,
so this kind of data is not available for mammals, and for, especially for human. So what we have here is just.
give the boy some drugs.
No, I mean because you always measure expression after like for after death. So so it's also like not from the expression is measured is not even from the same individual. It's really from if you look on annotation of the samples, it's from 40 different people. So like expression measured in kidney doesn't have the expression measurement from kidney doesn't have to be from the same person as in liver. So It doesn't go into that much detail, this measurement here.
Sorry, just very quickly to that. So is the mRNA you measure, is that integrated over a certain different time or a certain time?
No, I think it's just always taken from
one snapshot.
Mm-hmm. But I think maybe it's like on this on the level this, because what we compare is it's expression between tissues, so it's not gonna be that if you wanted. So it's just about this relative differences between tissues. So I mean, which seems to be okay for this data. So the differences between tissues are high enough that you can still find something.
Yeah. Actually, I have a question about the algorithm.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't sure in your score where you are trying to identify a cluster. Do you have this notion of homogeneous distribution of the vectors around the mean in that score?
The score. Okay. So. Okay. I'll show you again here. Right, so the score is this eta times x dot z minus mu. So this is the score. And what? So this is similarity between. This is how I define similarity between vectors.
Let's say you have two small clusters which are sort of tightly together.
Mm-hmm.
In your score, would you see that there is some sort of inhomogeneity in this big cluster?
There's this parameter eta that tells me what I mean by a cluster. So this gives me the expected radius of a cluster, right? So this is already in the model what I want to find. So if there's this
radius, and how about the actual distribution of the elements within the cluster? Okay, maybe.
No. Well. Okay. So if elements are more distant from the center, they will have smaller score. But the homogeneity I don't detect it somehow, but yeah. Okay, thank you.
So could you go back and look at some of the Microsoft data where they have originally tried to look at this idea of expression variation within and between species and look for genes whose expression significantly changed under some kind of quantitative model of evolution, but sort of just to go back to your first slide
for
the conventional measures.
I haven't tried it on Drosophila, but
the data sets.
Yeah.
I think they exist there.
Yeah, probably.
Go back to the same ones that looked at, but they have variation within strains and between strains.
Yeah, this would be interesting.
What tissues or how many tissues?
I have many tissues, and I know the more tissues the better because I have more distinction.
Yeah, there may not be very many tissues, but I can't remember.
Would be interesting because this is a method, right?
I'm wondering if they're kind of under-conservative because just analogy to that first graph where the correspondence by the conventional measures was not that good across tissues, but then by your measure they look much better.
Perhaps
they were under-conservative in assigning kind of genes having significant changes in expression.
Yeah. So. I haven't tried it, but I should.
Okay.
I mean, certainly possible.
It's a pretty well cited study. It's Kevin White.
Okay. So. Thank you.